VentureCast.
It's not about the corner office. It's not about the fancy title. It's not even about the extra money. Responsible leadership is about taking care of those who choose to follow you, and that care takes on many forms. This podcast is dedicated to bringing you the best guests with the best advice to help you succeed in that endeavor. The Responsible Leadership Podcast is a production of The Leadership Phalanx. To find out more about me and what I do, visit leadershipphalanx.com. That's leadership, PHALANX.com. And now, on to today's show. All right, listeners, hello and welcome to this episode of the Responsible Leadership Podcast. I've got a great guest for you today, Mr. Peter Rabar. Peter, thanks for being with us.
Earl, it's great to be here. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to spend some time with you today.
Oh, I am looking forward to this. And listeners, you know, what I want you to know about Peter before we get in this conversation is Peter is a workplace legal expert who guides clients through the most important decisions of their professional lives. After almost 20 years of representing major international corporate clients in high-profile matters, including over a decade as a chief employment attorney for a major global media company, Peter founded the Rabar Group, a boutique employment law practice based in New York City. He specializes in representing individuals, including C-suite executives, media personalities, and other professionals working in finance, media, sports, real estate, fashion, and tech. Now, I'm very interested, and is one of the reasons why I'm eager to have you as a guest on this show, with that background, I'm very interested to hear how you answer that first question where I start off all my guests. When you hear the phrase responsible leadership, what does that mean to you?
I knew you were going to ask that question, Earl. and I do have an answer prepared. It's not a long answer, but I did think a lot about it, and I thought a lot about, you know, the leaders I've worked with over my career and the ones I work with today who I love and have great relationships with. I wanted to start by saying, you know, every leader has to know that being a leader is a responsibility, right? I mean, that's got to be your first step. You have a responsibility to others, the ones you're either working with or, you know, given your military background, you know, leading in a military exercise or some similar activity. So, you know, to me, the first thing you got to start out with is understanding that being a leader itself is a responsibility. But to me, the leaders I admire the most, and my definition of responsible leadership really revolves around this concept, which is you need to feel that it's important to build trust with all of those people who work for you. So your employees, your clients, your customers, and you need to understand it's a two-way relationship. And so trust is at the center for me of being a responsible leader, and working to build that trust with everybody in your universe, whether it's at work or on the sports field or in a TV studio or on a military battlefield. That's got to be your primary mission. Now, there are qualities that I see, you know, that effective and responsible leaders have, you know, and to me, there's a few that stand out. You know, having vision and being able to articulate that vision to the people you're working with, integrity, courage to make difficult decisions, have difficult conversations, go into difficult situations, humility, knowing that you don't know everything, building out a team that could help you understand those things you don't know and tackle those problems outside your comfort zone. Compassion for those working with you and who rely on you. And especially in this day and age, in 2023, flexibility. Because as we've now seen, you know, over the past 3 years, the direction of the world can change on a dime. And, you know, the people working for you and with you, they're going to be looking to you for, you know, guidance when that happens. And you got to be ready to have your game plan totally changed for circumstances you may or may not have foreseen. So I wasn't planning to give a long answer, but maybe that was a little bit long. But for me, it all starts with understanding, you know, the trust obligation and building that trust.
Yeah, no, I love it. And, you know, it's like we talked in the pre-show workup, and like I tell all my guests, there's no right answer, no wrong answer, just your answer. And I love that answer. Right. I mean, that was an all encompassing answer there. And I really hope that listeners kind of go back and really, really take that in, because I loved that answer a lot. So thank you for putting that time and effort and thought into that, because that was a good one. So I got to ask, why workplace law? What got you interested in employment and workplace law?
Wow. So we'll go back a few years. I've been practicing over 20 years now. And, you know, growing up, there was obviously a lot of TV shows about lawyers that I think first got me, you know, interested in. And I was a child of immigrants to this country. So, you know, I didn't have parents who, you know, had a lot to offer in terms of guidance on career and career choices. A lot of it was my own exploration and sort of figuring the world out for myself. And so I went to college with the firm goal of going to law school, which I did right after college. And my one of my real passions in life is sports, and I wanted to actually be a sports lawyer. And so when I was at Georgetown for law school, I did some research on, you know, where I could go be a sports lawyer. And there's a firm in New York called Proskauer where a lot of people seem to do that type of work. They represented every league. And David Stern is a Proskauer alum, and Gary Bettman is a Proskauer alum, and many people. And Jessica Berman is now the commissioner of the Women's Soccer League, is someone I worked with very closely at Proskauer. And so, you know, my goal was to get there. And when I got there, you know, I found that the best cases and the best people to work with were labor lawyers, employment lawyers. And I love working with people. So that was a way to do that too. So it sort of checked a lot of boxes for me. And, you know, ultimately I wasn't that interested in continuing in sports law for a variety of reasons, but, I did enjoy working on people issues and cases that involve people, not as opposed to just contracts and money and things like that. Although a lot of cases involving people involve money too. And, you know, that's where I started. I that's how I got into it. And I did, you know, 6 years at Proskauer. I did 12 years at Hearst leading their global employment strategy. And then, you know, I really wanted to flip sides. So I came over and started my own firm about 6 years ago. And now I work really closely with executives and individuals.
No, that's interesting. Yeah. Poor Gary Bettman, right? I'm all my NHL fan listeners, like I could hear them booing as soon as you said his name. I always feel sorry for him whenever he comes out on the ice at a game, because like he just gets booed everywhere he goes. I feel sorry for the guy.
Well, I mean, he is. I mean, I've met him many times. He's an incredible leader. I mean, to be honest, I mean, he always has the best interests of the game at the top, as a top priority. Yeah. And, you know, everything he does sort of comes out of that. I mean, he's not in it for himself. Like, as you say, like he gets booed frequently, and I don't think he cares. You know, like he may care on some level, but it's not going to affect his decision making, is what I'm trying to say. I mean, he has incredible integrity, he has incredible focus, incredible vision, and really a lot of the qualities, you know, I talked about at the outset.
Yeah, no, and I think there's a great lesson there, because you are 100% right. Because one of the things I admire about the guy is the louder the boos, the bigger the smile is you know, and yeah, he takes it in stride. And I guess, you know, leaders, there is a big lesson there, right? Is you know, you're not always going to be the most popular person in the room, but as Peter said, you know, if you're making the right decisions for the right reasons, for, you know, for the integrity of your organization and all that, you got to learn to take the cheering and the jeering and have a smile on your face. Cause if you let it get to you, like if he didn't have that mentality, like I don't know what his mental state would be like if he didn't have that strong mentality. So yeah. I admire him on a lot of levels.
He's an incredibly strong and confident person. I mean, and you have to be in that role, and you have to be, as a leader of any organization. I have a lot of clients who, you know, work in high profile positions and have their decisions, you know, not only scrutinized by their employees, but by media and, you know, social media, et cetera. And sometimes, you know, you've talked about this in some of your prior episodes, you know, that I listened to before coming on today. You know, sometimes people get elevated into leadership roles with no real guidance of how to conduct themselves in those roles, how to be prepared for what comes next. And one of the things that, you know, new leaders are almost never prepared for is that criticism and how to deal with it. And if you take it too personally, you're going to fail. Or at least you're going to set yourself up for failure. And what I like to say to my clients is like, look, the higher you go, the harder the shots are going to be at you. And, you know, you just look at, like, you look at someone like Mark Zuckerberg. I mean, that guy doesn't get attacked every day. I mean, multiple times by thousands of people, by governments, by, you know, talk show hosts, by media beat reporters. I mean, it doesn't derail, you know, his vision for that company. And we could debate, you know, whether that's a good vision or not, but like ultimately you can't deny the success of what he's done from the outset, despite all the, you know, criticism he's received over the years. So, you know, I tell a lot of my clients, like, look, you know, if you believe in what you're doing and you're doing the right thing, you know, and people want to criticize you for it, then great. That's a notch in your belt. Like, that means people are paying attention to you, and that's going to happen, you know?
Oh yeah. Well, yeah, and it takes me back to what I call one of the greatest pieces of leadership advice that I got. It was actually outside the military. I think I mentioned on here a few times before. It was a gentleman named Phil Fuller, and he called it the 60-20-20 rule. And he said, in leadership, every decision you make, you're going to make 60% of the people happy. You're going to piss 20% of the people off, and 20% of the people aren't going to care one way or the other. The only thing that changes is what person falls into what category from decision to decision. One decision, you're going to make somebody happy. The next decision, they're going to be mad at you. You just got to get comfortable with them popping categories. And I think that's true. I think that's
it's absolutely true. And it's one of the important things. I mean, I, at the outset, you know, talked about compassion, and it's really important for leaders in my context is the workplace, because that's where I, you know, operate. It's important for leaders to remember that it's not all about you and how happy you are and how you feel. I mean, of course, that's something that's important in the whole equation, but I like to say, and I'm not unique in saying this, a lot of people say it, but like, if you're leading a company, you know, you're working for the employees and the people under you. And so if you're doing the right thing and you get criticism over it, you know, you shouldn't worry about it because of how it makes you feel, you know, and your ego. I mean, the important thing is that you're doing the right thing, and you're doing the right thing for your employees and the direction of the company. And, you know, sometimes there's going to be disagreements and differences in opinion. And so it's important to hear them and understand, you know, what they're saying, and but, you know, bruised ego is not too many people are going to care about that, you know, or should they?
Well, I think that is a beautiful segue into one of the topics I'd like to ask you about with, you know, and I'm sure that you've probably talked ad nauseum with clients of all stripes about this lately, and probably have seen all matter of opinions on is you know, kind of reintegration, return to office policies. Should I bring all my people back into the office? Should I continue remote work? Should I continue telework? And not just as an employee or an employer, but from the employee perspective. So, you know, what kind of trends and insight are you getting as more and more organizations are back to work and struggling with making telework and remote work policies either phasing out or like more standard practice going forward?
Well, I can tell you that this is the, as you said, as you imagine, this is the number one thing I feel like I've talked about for the past 2-3 years now. And in New York in particular, this is a very big issue because obviously so many pieces of the New York City economy revolve around people coming into work. And there is a lot of pressure to bring people to work every day in this city and many other cities. Here's what I'm seeing right now, and I feel pretty confident in what I'm about to say, just based on my experience, is that it's a very industry-specific decision regarding return to work, because the return to work policy is just one part of the overall, you know, battle that's going on right now for the control of the workplace. And so what you have is the overall trend of, and reality, it's not just a trend of employees having more leverage in the conversation about, you know, what the work conditions should be like, what the workplace should be like, et cetera. And employers really struggling with that, you know, because employers are used to having all the control, making all the decisions about when you come to work, when you go home, what the office looks like, where you sit, you know, what you're doing, right. All those things. Those are all open for discussion right now. And so you see different industries dealing with this in different ways. And you know, the other thing that's really pushing against this, and I think the most important thing is the tightness of the job market. You know, last week, despite thousands of layoffs that have happened, you know, since late last year, we learned that the unemployment rate is at its lowest level ever of 3.1%. So, you know, what's that saying? Is that there's still this very tight job market, where it's very hard for some employers to just say, come into work every day. Because the consequence of that, if an employee doesn't want to come to work, is you're going to have to fire them. And in a market where you can't hire people, you can't find enough people to hire, are you really going to fire someone over not coming into the office? And in some industries, the answer is yes, I will. But in most right now, the answer is still no, I can't do that. So one example that's very near and dear to me is the legal industry. And there's a lot of law firms in New York, as we know. They had their best years ever during the pandemic, And I talk to friends and clients who run big law firm offices in New York, and they're literally pulling their hair out over how to get people back into the office. No one's coming. They all have policies that say 3-4 days a week, and barely anyone shows up. And it's not just the younger generations who aren't coming in. It's the more senior partners who think like, hey, I'm getting everything done. I don't have to commute an hour. And so why should I come in? And I'm part of the group that makes the rules. So, you know, every industry is different. In finance, that would be very difficult to pull off. You know, there's a lot of pressure to come in. The job market isn't as good in finance right now. So those people are in every day. Obviously, if you work in retail service industries, you know, you have to come in. Tech is really a mixed bag right now. So it's a live issue. It's not a dead issue, and it's not a everybody has to do it one way or the other issue. It's very industry and company specific.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes total sense. And I think that's just the way it's going to be going forward. Like you said, I mean, you know, if you're in a hands-on, you know, it's going to be very hard to remote work an automotive assembly line job, you know. And I think that is really going to be the key for leaders and people in leadership and decision-making roles is having that flexibility. You know, I'll throw around some of the catchphrase buzzword type stuff, but, you know, having the emotional intelligence, having the leadership skills, having, you know, all of those things to be able to make those decisions, right? Does this position have to be here? If not, how flexible can I be? But also keeping in mind, and I think this is the one thing where while it was really popular to kind of, you know, get on Elon Musk for his return to work policies there, when you really look at what he was saying, it kind of made sense of, hey, all of our factory workers are going to be here. So it makes sense for our white collar workers to be here because they're no better than no one person is better than another person. Was that the right tone? Probably not necessarily the way he delivered it.
Right. As with most Elon Musk things.
Right. But, you know, you get that because, you know, there and I'm sure you kept up on this. There was that kind of and there's always been tension between white collar, blue collar workers. But there was really a lot of tension starting to flare up of, well, you got to stay home because of your cushy office job during COVID. But I still had to come in. I still had to punch buttons. I still had to pop rivets. Right. And so I think he was trying to temper some of that a little bit within Tesla, but it's a tricky position right now with those kind of jobs. And as you mentioned with tech and service, and it's an interesting time to be in that leadership role, isn't it?
Oh, for sure. And the examples you just used, they're really good examples because when leaders come to me, executives come to me to ask about this issue, you know, it may surprise some people I know to learn that, like, I don't always come down on one side or the other. You know, my advice to them is you got to do what's right for you, and you can pick the side you want to be on. You know, I'm going to encourage you to be as flexible as possible. That's first. And then as genuine as possible about it. So I'll tell you, I had a conversation with a client who said, well, I'm ready to bring everyone back. And we're about to announce, you know, a 5-day a week policy. And I said, okay, let me stop you there for a second. Where did you come up with that idea? Well, you know, I went and I talked to, you know, my board, and they thought that this was the best idea for us. And I said, well, did you talk with your employees about it? Did you survey them? Do you see sort of where their minds are at these days? You know, and they said to me, no, we haven't done that. And I said, well, you know, you can do what you want, but my suggestion is, you know, that you do a quick survey with your employees, sort of see what they would be comfortable with, how they feel, you know, what would happen if you went to a 3-day policy, a 4-day policy, a 5-day policy. Because to be honest with you, your board is comprised of other executives, and I'm not sure that's the right perspective to rely on here. And also, you know, when you message this, you're going to have to talk about, you know, the needs of your organization and why it's important for people to be here, because they're going to be thinking in their back of their minds, I did my job just fine at home. So why do you need me here? And what's going to be the message that's going to resonate with them around that point? And, you know, just to close the loop on that story, the client surveyed the employees. No one was interested in coming in 5 days a week. And it would have been a total disaster if they had rolled it out. And so, you know, they rolled out a 3-day program instead. And then, you know, they've added all this additional programming that I think will be really meaningful to their employees. But you have to be genuine. I mean, I've talked to leaders who said, well, it's important for us to have people in so they could learn, they could watch how senior people do their jobs, you know, they could be mentored. And my response to them is always like, well, how much of that did you do before?
Right.
And if you've never done it, who's going to believe that you're going to start doing it now as part of a effort to get people back into the office? And trust me, I've talked to people in those situations who've gone forward, and, you know, employees quickly figure out that the mentoring is not going to happen, and people come into the office and they close their doors, and, you know, they take conference calls on Zoom from their desks and other, you know, assorted stories. So you really, if you're running a business and you're debating what to do on these policies, like, you really got to think about your own culture and your own needs. And, you know, I strongly suggest, like, getting data and feedback from your employees and incorporating them into the decision, and, you know, really making them feel heard, you know, in how you go about this. Those are ways, I can't guarantee success, but certainly those are ways to help yourself be more successful when you're, you know, implementing difficult decisions.
I think that is outstanding advice. And I think this is going to be a good spot here to take a quick break and pay some bills. So we're going to run some commercials here real quick. And on the other side, we'll come back and continue our conversation with Peter Rabar. All right, folks, here we are back with Peter Rabar of the Rabar Group. If you didn't catch the previous conversation there, I suggest you go back and listen to that, talking about return to office mandates and how to better communicate those and facilitate those as you are looking for your personal policy for your organization. Peter gave us some really good advice there, which I think every leader should implement. But kind of the flip side of that, and you mentioned the hiring or the employment numbers there. I think one of the pieces that employers are struggling with, and this is just kind of my anecdotal perspective here, I'm not as deep into this as you are by any stretch, but I think one of the pieces that a lot of employers are struggling with right now is, I don't think at any point in time in history have employees had so much power. They've not had as much information. They've not had so many tools, and they've not had the ability to where if they don't find the job that they're looking for to be hired into, you know, for a few hundred dollars and a couple of hours on Wix or Squarespace or whatever they choose, they can start their own business and become their own employer. So what are some of these hiring trends and employee tactics you see that are starting to kind of creep in here?
Well, I think you summarized a lot of the issues really well, Earl. I mean, it is fascinating to talk to people as they are, you know, plotting their next step. And I feel really lucky to be able to do that every day. People are thinking a lot about who they want to work for and what they want to do and how they want to do it. You know, we're coming out of the crisis phase of the pandemic. You know, everybody's reevaluating the most important aspects of their lives, whether it's, you know, where they live, who they're friends with, you know, what kind of car they're driving. And work is such a big part of life, right? You know, where they're working and who they're working for. And I think the key here in hiring, and this goes back to the trust proposition that we started off the show talking about, is that people want to work for companies where they're going to feel respected and treated fairly, paid equitably, and generally like rewarded for their contributions, right? And feeling respected is like a very, very big part of that. And so, you know, when you look at, you know, the stories about Elon Musk that seem to be in the news every single day, including today, I was just reading one where he fired one of his top engineers because the engineer told him in a meeting that his tweet engagement is decreasing because maybe he's not that popular anymore. And he just fired the guy in the middle of, you know, a meeting. So people don't want to work for bosses like that, you know, and maybe, you know, he thinks that that's a good idea to set the tone, but, you know, trust me, that's not going to work in recruitment. So, you know, you have these employees now who have salary information, and that's coming from a variety of states where that's now required, like New York is one of them, where employers are required to post salary ranges. And it also exists in California and in Colorado. And I predict that's going to spread throughout the country, frankly. You know, they have salary information that they're getting either from postings or mostly from other employees. So you also have the younger generations in the workplace who are openly sharing data with each other on salaries. Now, I've never shared my salary with any of my colleagues, but I have clients who do that regularly. I have clients who show me spreadsheets of all their colleagues' salaries. So, you know, there's that data point. You have sites like Glassdoor and others where employees are posting comments, sometimes responsibly, sometimes I would say irresponsibly. And there's just a ton of data points out there, right, for employees to make these decisions. And that's very difficult for companies to deal with. And that's why it's, you know, very important to, you know, think about how you treat your employees and how you message that and how you betray it and how you just live it every day in your company. Because if you're not, you're going to be called on it. And you're going to lose employees over it, and you're not going to be able to, you know, recruit employees because of that.
Yeah. Well, and I think that pay thing is such an important piece because, you know, I'm a little bit on the old school side there. I used to be a little bit more on the old school side there where, you know, that was kind of private business. You don't share that. You know, if you get a bonus or something, that's between you and your boss. But, you know, When President Obama back in 2009 signed the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act into law, I remember reading the history on that. And are you familiar with that act?
Oh yeah,
yeah. And the story behind that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I'll let you kind of fill in any more details you like there. But like for the listeners, like. I mean, essentially, the only way that Lilly Ledbetter found out that she was being underpaid was because a coworker just happened to share their information. And that kind of triggered the whole turn of events. And it's like, if you're not sharing this pay information, you're setting yourself up to be taken advantage of, right?
Oh, well, I think that's definitely, I don't think we're there yet, but I think we're really close to it. And, it's been really interesting watching the reaction of companies to these laws. There's been a real collective freak out over having to publish this information, but I've worked with companies, you know, Colorado's had this law for 2 years now, you know, and Colorado has been a huge, you know, hotbed of growth, for companies and jobs over the, you know, especially during the main, crisis years of the pandemic. There was a lot of people moving there, you know, and these laws didn't stop that. And they didn't hurt companies, you know, that were based there or doing work there. They, I think, I would argue, helped them. And there is initial data, you know, at least from like the recruiting websites, you know, so it's pretty raw, but job listings with salary information are getting a ton more traffic than ones without. And there's also, you know, been articles about, you know, how, you know, browsing through job listings is now an activity akin to like looking at, you know, real estate listings. You know, it's like a pleasure activity for some people just to see what's out there and what's going on. But for a company, you know, it's not something you should be afraid of. It's not something that's going to change how you do business. But you better be damn sure that, you know, everything's in order. So it's an important time to make sure, you know, go back, see how people are being paid, see, you know, look at the experience levels, look at, you know, the ranges, the bands, make sure it all makes sense. Because if it doesn't, that's where the problems come in. And, you know, I think for some companies, that's hard. And so they'll have to figure it out. But ultimately, they will be in a better place.
Well, so, I mean, it's interesting to hear you say it, because I agree, you know, and it's been my experience, you know, doing leadership development, talking about diversity and inclusion. But I think the way you put that there was perfect. For some organizations, it's hard. So I'm kind of curious in your experiences and, you know, listeners, this is just, you know, Peter's ideas. Why do you think that it's so hard for an organization to do these things? Because it seems like, you know, there's all this evidence that you pointed out that it's the right thing to do. You'd think it would be easy. Why do you think it's hard for them to do these things?
Oh boy, that's we could do a whole nother episode on that.
There you go.
Well, I mean, you're dealing with human beings, so let's start there. You know, and there's a lot of bias that's built in, and there's a lot of, I think, with a lot of leaders, they don't like doing things just because they're being told to do it, whether it's by a government agency or a group of employees or a union or whatever. You know, there's always that built-in resistance too. In some industries, it's just flat out difficult because there are factors that come into play that are not so easily dealt with. So, like, I'll give you one example. I do a lot of work. I used to do a ton of work, but now I still do, you know, a good amount of work in television with TV personalities, or, you know, even radio personalities, or I represent a lot of podcast people, hosts. There are just factors that contribute to salary that are just not so straightforward. You know, some of them have to do with the appeal of a particular personality. Some of them have to do with what market they came from, you know, what market they started in, you know, so there's these trailing factors that contribute to salary levels. And so that those are factors employers consider. And now these laws are really trying to eliminate those. And so that's a difficult exercise for some of these leaders to understand. And the laws are really going after these like systematic long-term, you know, bias issues that have created equal pay problems. But for some leaders, you know, there's a variety of reasons. I wish I could give you a clear answer to that, but I think, you know, in some cases it's innocent and sort of related to, you know, some industry specific things, but obviously in a lot of cases it's not. And so we got to root those problems out and keep working on them. And I think these laws will be tremendously helpful in doing that. They're not going to solve the problem, but they will shed a lot of light on the issues for sure.
Yeah, no, I think you did a good job there. I mean, the quick couple minute version there, I think that was a really good job with it, because you're right. I mean, it's multifaceted. Every situation has its own reasons. Every organization, you know, people are complicated, right? We're always make that point. We're complicated creatures in complicated situations, dealing with complicated creatures in complicated situations. So every one of them is going to be different. There's no one size fits all solution.
And look, I mean, the risk, again, I would say to companies, is if you don't handle it the right way, you're going to, I wouldn't even worry so much about the lawsuit. You know, that's, like, clients always get surprised when I say, like, let's not talk about the lawsuit for a second, okay? Because I'm a lawyer, and I say, let's not talk about the lawsuit for a second. Let's talk about the fact that if someone discovers, let's say a highly, and here, I'll give you an example I deal with all the time, a highly talented, highly respected, highly performing female executive who has been historically underpaid compared to her male colleagues. And she discovers that, you know, if you don't address that issue, you're going to lose her. And if you lose her, you're going to lose other women who are in the same position, who are going to start asking the same questions. And then you're going to potentially have a problem of being known as a company that is not friendly to women.
Yep.
Because if someone looks at your LinkedIn movements or trade, you know, news about personnel moves, they'll see, you know, wow, you know, 10 women left this company in the last month. Why is that happening? Yeah. You know, and people are just going to form their own conclusions about it, and they're not going to be good. So, so the real issue is you're going to lose good people. And, you know, when you have a 3% unemployment rate, like, it's going to take a long time to replace them. It's going to take a long time to restore your reputation and deal with these issues. So, like, you should get ahead of, if you're smart, you're going to get ahead of these issues. You're going to have an eye out for them. You're not going to complain when the laws come out. You're just going to get ahead and do the work, you know, to make sure you're in the right position.
100%. I love that. I love that. Well, Peter, we've been chatting here for a little over 40 minutes here, and I'm just kind of curious before we close out, is there anything that you'd like to leave listeners with that we haven't had a chance to touch on yet?
Well, the one concept I would say, you know, for leaders of businesses is, and I think it's apparent in everything we've talked about here today, is that there's no going back to the pre-pandemic definition of normal. And if that's what you're trying to do right now, then you're setting yourself up for failure. That's going to be an endless struggle, because nothing in anybody's lives is the same. You know, no one could look at their lives and say it's the same as it was before, because, you know, maybe they've moved, maybe they're in a different job, maybe they've lost good friends and family members. You know, everything has changed in some degree, and some in very different degrees. And work is not immune from that. So if you're a leader looking to set, you know, the culture and the policies, like, don't look at it from a 2019 lens. Look at it from a 2023 lens. Be aware of what's happening now. Be willing to listen. Be willing to admit that you don't know everything, and be willing, I think most importantly, to give a little flexibility and have some understanding for what people are going through. There's still people going through very difficult times. There are still parents whose kids get banned from school if they have a fever. You know, I mean, there's a variety of things that people are dealing with in their personal lives. So it's a hard time to be a manager and a leader, but at the same time, it's very exciting. You know, it's a great opportunity, you know, to reset a culture and build a culture. But you really need to be living in the now, you know, and figuring out what the new normal is, not trying to go back to the old normal.
Yeah. No, that is outstanding advice. Outstanding advice. So people want to find out more about you. They want to find out more about the Raybar Group, the services you offer, the articles that you write, the interviews that you've conducted. What is a great place for them to find out all that information?
Well, you know, my LinkedIn page has you know, probably the best collection of all that stuff, but also my website, theraybargroup.com, is a good place for that and has my contact information. And also I'll be launching a newsletter for executives, hopefully, I think, by the end of the month on Substack. And, you know, so that'll be, you know, a fun way to interact with executives and talk about, you know, trends in the workplace. So all of those places, I'm always available. I'm pretty responsive. And, you know, I love talking about the workplace. And today was really fun. So I'm glad we had a chance to do it.
Outstanding. Well, we'll make sure we get those links on there. So everything's just a click of the way for the listeners. And I'll echo your last comments there. I had a blast with this conversation. It's been amazing. Time has flown. Peter, thank you very much for being a guest and doing the work you do. It's so desperately needed. Appreciate you filling that niche there and doing the work that you're doing, championing these causes. And just thank you for being an outstanding guest and this conversation with me and my listeners today on this episode of the Responsible Leadership Podcast.
Thank you, Earl.
Well, all right, folks, there you have it. Another great show about responsible leadership. I really appreciate you listening. And if you have any feedback for me, please reach out at earl@leadershipphalanx.com. That's earl@leadershipphalanx.com. Thank you for rating, reviewing, subscribing, and sharing the show so these messages can spread further and make a bigger impact. With that, I look forward to speaking with you again in the next episode.
Hey there, I'm DC. I host the Rock Podcast, Back to the Arena, The Interviews. It's about a 30-minute podcast where I talk one-on-one with a band who has released new music. You can find us on all the best podcast sites like Spotify, Apple, Google, iHeartRadio, and more. If you're a rock fan like me, subscribe today to Back to the Arena, The Interview.
Electric Acid.
Have you ever wondered what actually happens in Congress every day? Stay informed on Capitol Hill's daily happenings with a concise, factual summary of the Senate and House of Representatives' activities from the previous session, free from bias, on the Congressional Record Daily Digest podcast. Subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and discover the process from the heart of U.S. politics. The Congressional Record Daily Digest, an Electricast production.
Electricast. Electricast.